Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is the Golf Hour
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's your host, Will Doctor.
All right, nice to have you with us. I'm your host, Will Doctor, taking you through the latest in the world of professional golf here in the middle of the third major of the year in the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. What a start for the 2023 U.S. Open winner and Wyndham Clark, opened 64-69, and what a heater he's on right now. I mean, you look at the players, you know, coming into this week who were on the best roll as far as their last three tournaments, and it didn't get that much better than Wyndham Clark. Won in Dallas at the end of May, finished third at Jack's Place at the Memorial, and had a commendable enough run-up to the U.S. Open in Canada last week, where he finished tied 11th. And, you know, to be honest, I got the wind. When you look back to Tuesday and previewing this tournament, I got the waves completely mixed up. The forecast said one thing on Tuesday, and by the time we got to Thursday, my impressions were that AM on Thursday would have the easier go, and then the Thursday afternoon waves would get completely crushed with wind and rain, and that's not how it went down. There was a fog delay Thursday morning, which pushed everything back about 2 hours. The morning got damp and windy conditions on Thursday, and then by the time the afternoon wave teed off, it was, you know, what, between 2:30 and 4 p.m. the afternoon Thursday wave went, and it was completely tame and calm conditions. The wind that we thought was going to come in Thursday did not come. You know, I thought there was a chance, looking back to Tuesday, that players would get pulled off the golf course Thursday afternoon. That's what the forecast looked like, but that was not the case. And as a result, the names you are seeing atop the leaderboard, you look at this top five, other than Sam Stevens, who we're going to get to, so fired up for Sam and our kid Will Dennis and their chances being in contention going into the weekend. You know, we're going to hear from Sam later on, talked about loving to step up his game at the tougher golf course. You know, whether that be, and especially ones that feature Poa grass on the greens. He grew up on Poa greens in Wichita, has played very well at Torrey Pines over the years, over on the West Coast, which, you know, typically features windy conditions, and obviously Poa greens. You know, Sam, Will, they're ready for the weekend. But looking at the names at the top of the leaderboard, they all came from late, early wave. Wyndham Clark took advantage of the tame conditions on Thursday afternoon, shooting 64. Matt Fitzpatrick was in the Thursday afternoon wave. You know, he started 2 over through 4 on Thursday, brought it all the way back, shot 67 in the opening round, followed it up yesterday morning with a 70. Xander Schauffele came from late early. And Xander really didn't even take advantage of the easier conditions on Thursday afternoon, shot 71, but then came out yesterday morning first thing and shot 66 to get within 4. Four guys in second place, four back of the lead. Fitzpatrick, Schauffele, Sam Stevens, and then Tom Kim, also in a share of second at 3 under, and then Colin Morikawa is in solo 6th at 2 under. And we'll get to these chasers. We start with Wyndham Clark, who, yeah, it is amazing when you take it back a year to last year's U.S. Open. You know, he was struggling during that time in 2025. This is a guy who has won 3 times on the PGA Tour, including a major at the U.S. Open at LACC, which a lot of people thought was not a legitimate U.S. Open venue. But, you know, last year he just got absolutely skewered for basically his behavior on the golf course when things were not going well for him. And when you look back to last year's U.S. Open at Oakmont, you know, he missed the cut, went in the locker room, and destroyed two locker rooms at Oakmont. The club told him to never come back again, and the media was deservingly all over him after that. And he can't have that type of that type of behavior at such a legendary club. You know, we saw Joaquim Niemann lose it a little bit earlier this week. We're going to get to him in the final segment. What a turnaround. Basically made a 9 or 10 on the sixth hole in the first round. You know, has a tantrum on the sixth hole, tossing his club, gets a two-shot penalty, comes out Friday, shoots 65 to make it inside the cut line after the tantrum. But he got docked two shots, and obviously there's been a lot of talk over the last 24 hours about the you know, about the fact that, you know, Paul McGinley on Golf Channel mentioned last night, you know, you never heard Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, you never heard these guys have, let out the profanity that the modern golfer does. And it was really a mental mindset that started with Tiger Woods when you'd see him make a bogey, absolutely lose his mind, kick over his bag, throw a club, and then turn around and birdie the next hole. And I think a lot of us have grown up watching that and think that maybe that's the right way to jack yourself up, and you make a mistake, you get pissed, you throw something, and then you bounce back. It's a way to light a fire under your butt. But there's a line to be drawn with everything. I think that the guy who plays it off the best is Jordan Spieth. You know, we're always watching him go through some kind of emotional roller coaster on the golf course, but really he's never crossed that line of doing something unacceptable. And what I mean by that, you know, tossing your club 60 yards like Niemann did, destroying a locker like Clark did last year at the U.S. Open. We've even seen world number one Scottie Scheffler go through some of his own battles, you know, tossing the ball in the water at Bay Hill and arguing with a reporter at the Masters, and Scheffler is in position to make a move going into the weekend at even par seven back. The USGA, you know, they hopefully, and the greens got watered last night at Shinnecock, so this might not be the case, but the USGA has the opportunity with more wind this weekend to really make the golf course tough. They have the opportunity to speed up the greens. And Xander Schauffele, who's only four back, you know, he said in his presser yesterday afternoon that the USGA has the ability to turn the screws up at Shinnecock and bring the winning score all the way back down to even par. That's a big statement with Wyndham Clark there at 7-under. And we're going to hear from him in just a second about the fact that he's trying to get it to somewhere around 11, 12-under, plays an aggressive game. But he has been cautiously aggressive. Wyndham Clark, you know, through two rounds, the first round was obviously flawless. He is very hot on the greens right now. I'm not going to sit here and say he's been perfect off the tee. I saw Wyndham Clark over the last two rounds get away with a lot of offline tee balls that ended up in matted down areas where he was still able to get an approach shot on the green. But I have liked Wyndham's approach as far as putting the second shot in the middle of the green and trusting his putter. He has made a lot of putts from 15 to 30 feet, and that is by way of him. He's playing an aggressive game off the tee, but then he's getting conservative into the greens, putting the ball into the safe place, and trusting the putter. It's a game plan that has worked well. I would personally, with how hot Clark has been at the moment and how well he's played in his three tournaments coming into this thing, I would be shocked if he went all, if he, you know, shot, you know, a combined seven over the next two rounds to get to go back to even par. Maybe we see the course play like that. That's obviously what Xander and the rest of the Chasers are hoping for, but here was Clark, the 2023 U.S. Open champion, on his second-round mindset after his 69 that got him to 7-under par total?
You know, it's a lot. I was really struggling last year, and, you know, it was a terrible way to end.
Yeah, AJ, I think I think that we'll get to that. That's I think that was Clark reflecting on Oakmont. And AJ, let me know that there should be a Clark second round mindset. And if not, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I didn't really think about anything. It was 4 a.m. I'm still pretty tired. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's had an awesome day yesterday and then came out today, wasn't as good, but I really fought, and hopefully this is the toughest day for me, and I keep playing good golf. But you know, really, I was having a lot of fun, and you know, our group was playing great kind of yesterday and today, so we kind of all fed off each other.
Yeah, and that's right. Wyndham did not even finish his first round on Thursday evening, had to come back and finish it in the morning, so it was an early start. But He is really somewhat, you know, this is Wyndham Clark's sixth career 36-hole lead in an individual stroke play event on the PGA Tour. He is 1-for-5 in converting leads. His only 36-hole conversion came at Quail Hollow back in 2023. You know, his most recent kind of big lead, his most recent four-shot lead going into a weekend was back at the 2024 Players. He ended up finishing tied second, where Scottie Scheffler beat him on the 72nd hole. But as far as Wyndham's past at majors and how it went down at LA Country Club back in 2023, Wyndham was in second place going into the weekend at LACC. I think Ricky Fowler had the lead through 36. Maybe mistaken. Need to go check on that. But Wyndham did come from behind in his first major. He did not have a lead, and I believe when he holds 18-hole leads, I believe he's 0-for-6 in finishing those off, and then, of course, as aforementioned, 1-for-5 in converting 36-hole leads. So the numbers would say he's coming back to earth, and one of these chasers could get it done. Here was Clark on his aggressive mindset, and really yesterday, here's him talking more about his goal and really trying to get it to 11, 12 under par at this tough U.S. Open test.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten a lot of grief since last year, rightfully so. The thing that's unfortunate is who I am.
I believe there's one more before we get to Clark reflecting on Oakmont last year and smashing those lockers. It should be Clark trying to get to 11 or 12 under par. Let me know if there's any issue with that. Go ahead, AJ. Okay, we'll move on there. That we had some audio of Wyndham Clark and his aggressive goals and kind of talking about the aggressive game he plays and trying to get it to 11, 12 under. He's currently at 7 under with a four-shot lead, and it's a full-circle moment in his mind. The fact of the matter is, you know, he feels like he's a changed person. There's a lot of media elites that feel like he's a changed person compared to last year when he was destroying lockers at Oakmont. The fact of the matter is he is just playing much better golf, and he is in his mind, he's in a much better position at home. You know, he's got a new girlfriend at home. He has adjusted his swing over the last year. He's made some changes in his swing that he feels really good about, and he's got a mental coach in Julie Elion who he's been working with her for the last 3 years. So when he was kicking lockers at Oakmont, I mean, he's still working with Julie Elion, but he feels like he's in a dialed in place compared to back then. And, here was Clark yesterday talking about that incident at Oakmont.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten a lot of grief, since last year, rightfully so. The thing that's unfortunate is that's not who I am. What happened last year, and I'm hoping I can win back the fans that I had or some new fans, because you know it was a terrible incident, and you know, I really feel like I can show people that I'm fun and outgoing, I'm fierce, competitive, love the game, respect the game, and I just had a bad moment, so hopefully I can win those people back, and I definitely feel like I'm in a better place, and you know, hopefully a great weekend and a great rest of the year. Maybe I'll gain all those fans back.
All right, so Wyndham Clark is a is the plus 173 favorite going into the weekend. Let's see. We will get to Matthew Fitzpatrick and Xander Schauffele and Sam Stevens, the Chasers, at 3-under on the other side. Fitzpatrick right now, his odds plus 755. Xander Schauffele plus 624. Sam Stevens 31-1. That's some disrespect there for our boy Sam Stevens. Still excellent value going into the weekend. And then also in that packet at 3-under, four players at 3-under, that's Tom Kim, and he is 24-1 heading into the weekend. This is the Golf Hour with Will Doctor. We'll be back hearing from Matt Fitzpatrick and Xander Schauffele on the other side. This is ESPN Houston. We're back after this.
This is the Golf Hour
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor.
Yeah, really the top three names on this leaderboard at the U.S. Open, Wyndham Clark, Matt Fitzpatrick, Xander Schauffele, all incredible resumes at our nation's title. Clark, 2023 U.S. Open champion. Fitzpatrick won the 2022 U.S. Open at the Country Club, and Xander Schauffele probably has the best resume of anyone in golf history at the U.S. Open without a win. Don't believe he's finished worse than, let's see, Xander Schauffele has never finished worse than 14th in eight career U.S. Opens. So he is due to win one here. His game works. Xander's game is built for the U.S. Open. He preaches a decathlete mindset where he's equally well versed in all aspects of his game, from the driving to the approach, the chipping to the putting, and really the impressive thing about Xander this week is that he was on the easier wave with the weather going out Friday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, Friday morning. He did not take advantage of the easier conditions on Thursday afternoon, but really got after it yesterday morning with the 66. Here was Xander after his second round.
Yeah, I played great today. Pretty motivated after last night. Went sort of laying down and being in that easier wave and not taking advantage of it was a big bummer. So pretty pumped to come out and shoot something low.
Your scoring average shows that you play U.S. Open golf courses really well. What do you think is, you know, the match there, and then what do you have to do to kind of get that next step?
Yeah, it's just a lot of patience and good golf shots for the most part. I feel like U.S. Open, the championship itself, just wears you out. It's a long week, and you really feel it after. But if you can do some work in between, you can get rewarded for it. So that's sort of what I try and do.
So Xander's 66 yesterday, that equaled his second best score in 38 career rounds at the U.S. Open. His best was a 62 in the opening round in 2023 at Los Angeles Country Club. But once again, Xander, a two-time major champion who has finished top 14 in all nine prior U.S. Open appearances. And you look at his run-up into the U.S. Open this year, finished 29th in his last start at Memorial, but you look at the first two majors and his performance at majors. He finished tied ninth at the Masters, finished tied seventh at the PGA at Aronimink, and won earlier in the fall of 2025 at the Bay Current. That was his eighth win. So Xander, I like his chances. He's going to keep up. He's not going to make the big mistake, and he will be there if Wyndham Clark regresses. No promises there if you're just joining the show. Once again, your leader, Wyndham Clark, he is playing some of the best golf at the moment right now as far as his last three events. Does not have a great record with a 36-hole lead. Obviously has the major temper issues that right now, when he's playing well, feels like he has control of. But that can change very quickly at a U.S. Open. One of the guys chasing him in Xander Schauffele talked about how the USGA, they could make this, they could toughen up the conditions as much as they want and bring Wyndham Clark right back to even par. Here was Xander talking about that.
It's a brutal week, you know. Everyone watching at home wants to see guys shooting in the 80s and doing crazy things, and I get it, you know. It's sort of once a year you get to see some carnage, and it's at a U.S. Open, so try to embrace it as much as you can and you know, on days like today and even last night, you know, take what the course can give you. But Shinnecock is, you know, they've made it very fair at the USGA, and it can be as crazy as they want it to be, for sure.
I think a lot of people wonder, would you rather be in the lead by four shots or chasing? And I think the common media perception is that you would rather be chasing. But I think Matthew Fitzpatrick, who sits at 3-under, 4-back, he gave some interesting insight on Wyndham Clark's lead and his approach going into the weekend as a chaser.
Yeah, there's obviously that. At the same time, you'd always like a, I don't know what he's got, 3-4-shot lead. That sounds much nicer than being 4-behind, I will say that. But, yeah, like you say, I feel like it's a golf course that can beat you up pretty quickly. You have to stay patient, but, you know, if you're chasing, you can't really afford too many mistakes if you're that many behind. So,
and, yeah, that is what the back end of that quote is kind of Fitzpatrick saying that, you know, with the way Wyndham Clark is rolling right now, if he keeps this up, these chasers are going to have to play near perfect golf to contend with him. And if you've watched Wyndham's first two rounds, it's not like he's sticking all his second shots to inside 5 feet. He is playing fairly conservative golf into these greens and making a ton of putts. He's going to be a tough guy to track down. And another big storyline over the first two rounds was the green softness at Shinnecock. And the top of this leaderboard has rolled it well based on how much, at least in the first two rounds compared to early in the week, how much the greens changed. They were lightning fast at the beginning of the week. Everyone was reporting that these were greens that could really get out of hand as far as speed. But really the first two rounds they played, you know, on the stimp, rolling between a 10, 10.5. Uphill putts were very slow. You know, I saw on the first round, but my picks this week, horrible. Chris Goddard made the cut on the number. His speed control on the greens has been awful. You know, you look back at some of the replays from Thursday. Goddard was leaving, 15, 20 footers, 4 or 5 feet short. And so the adjustment has been a big thing this week. If on the season you're not a very strong putter, like two of my other picks were, Adam Scott and Siwoo Kim, maybe recently they've been putting well, but on the large scope of the season, have they been the best adjusters in wind and poor conditions, wind putting? Absolutely not. Fitzpatrick, he is another one. The one weakness in his game on the season has been the putting. He's still outside the top 90 on the PGA Tour in putting, but he has adjusted well. Here was Fitzpatrick, the 2022 U.S. Open champion, on making that adjustment at Shinnecock with slower greens over the first two rounds.
I listened to Rory's comment the other day about bumping it into the bank. And, you know, a lot of these holes, with the way the greens are, you can do that, but when it is soft, you don't really have that opportunity. It's not going to bounce forward. It's kind of going to die straight away. The weird thing as well is the steep uphill putts are extremely slow, but the steep downhill putts are extremely fast. And I know it sounds like it's stating the obvious, but with how much slower the greens are than a normal US Open, I would say. It's obviously quite a contradiction to your feels when you're out there, particularly coupled with the strength of the wind on some of the greens.
Left, Jay.
So,
Wyndham, following up on the Wyndham question, you're going out 4 strokes behind him tomorrow.
Yeah, AJ, we can stop it there. That is Matt Fitzpatrick, the most recent international winner of the US Open, in search for his fourth win of the season. What a heater he's on as well. You know, one Valspar, one the RBC Heritage at Hilton Head, and then one the Zurich two ball alongside his brother Alex and Fitzpatrick, coming off a solo second place finish at the Canadian Open. The only reason why I'd favor the couple guys in front of him, Wyndham Clark, and who's in the lead at 7-under, and then Fitzpatrick shared with a lead with Xander Schauffele, Sam Stevens, and Tom Kim. You do worry about Fitzpatrick's putter going a little cold over the weekend with the large scope of work on the greens, as we just talked about. But he did his chipping and putting so far this week. I believe Fitzpatrick was 11 for 11 around the greens. in between the first and second round, got up and down a crazy amount of time in the first round. So, you know, three, you know, when you look at the top three names, Wyndham, Fitzpatrick, Xander, this is going to be a dogfight. You'd have to flip a coin as far as who I would pick amongst those three. I'd say Wyndham, with the way he's been putting from 15 to 30 feet, I just don't know how you pick against him going into the weekend. You could lean on the fact that he has not held up well with leads in PGA Tour events through 36 holes, but, I mean, he's also a three-time winner with a major championship on the resume. Colin Morikawa is five back. He's a two-time major winner. He talked a lot with the press yesterday about how, you know, his back is still uncomfortable. Morikawa has dealt with a back injury all season. He has still managed to get another win. Won his fifth PGA Tour title at Pebble Beach back around the California Swing and followed it up with four straight top tens after that. The road to Shinnecock as far as last three have been rough for Morikawa. He went 62nd in Miami, 55th at the PGA Championship, and then 29th in his prep event at the Canadian Open. His wife, Kathleen, is about to give birth to their second child, so Morikawa, like Scheffler earlier in the year, has had more important business to take care of. But here in a major, in tough conditions, he has found himself in contention, only five back. Talked about how the back was still uncomfortable. My theory is that because Morikawa has not been able to hit full shots, and he's had to put a little bit more control on his irons, you know, hit the 6-iron from 150 out into the wind, take the 9-iron from 125 into the wind. He has had to do that a lot this year, and he has done it well. And those are the exact shots you need at Shinnecock right now in the 40-mile-per-hour winds. He is someone kind of like a Pavin, hitting it nowhere off the tee, but hitting his irons with incredible precision. Like Morikawa to stay up there over the weekend, finished 7th back at the Masters. He should be someone who stays around as a two-time major champion. We have to take a quick break. On the other side, we'll hear from my favorite player atop the leaderboard. That's Sam Stevens. We'll hear from him on why he steps up on tough golf courses, how he's reset after some struggling golf over the last 3 weeks, and why he enjoys putting on Poa Green so much. This is the Golf Hour with Will Doctor. We're back after this.
Is the Golf Hour
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor.
Yeah, it's looking tough out there. Coverage, U.S. Open coverage, already live on Peacock. They're showing some coverage on Golf Channel as well. This has just been for Golf Channel. Luckily, they have Noda Begay on the studio coverage now. This has been a Golf Channel, their nighttime live from coverage with Paul McGinley and Brandel Chamblee, I think is absolutely biblical. I think they do a great job covering the game. This daytime studio coverage from Golf Channel, you know, Ryan Lavner, Damon Hack, you know, Mark Rolfing, where are the past U.S. Open champions with their insight? Where is Raymond Floyd? You know, I know Corey Pavin had a press conference earlier this week, but I would like to see him in the studio setting. You know, Noda Begay, he's played in some U.S. Opens, won a PGA Tour event, friends with Tiger. He's going to deliver some good insight. I would just like to see more past U.S. Open champions doing the coverage on Golf Channel. You know, Corey Pavin, where is Andy North? Where is Curtis Strange? I am not getting the proper insight from the daytime Golf Channel studio booth, even though I know, once again, as we spoke about Tuesday, no one's watching this stuff. Everyone's at work during the week, but it looks like they have improved their set here on a Saturday morning with Noda Begay and Paige McKenzie, two former players, albeit not U.S. Open champions, but two former players who at least can give the a little bit of a feel of what the players are going through. Let's get back to this leaderboard. I really want to get into Sam Stevens because this is just a great story here. You know, Sam Stevens, this is someone who has yet to miss a cut at a major championship, 29 years old, has a bit of a journey, a journeyman story here. Played his college golf at Oklahoma State, was on a very elite Oklahoma State team with Matthew Wolf and Chris Ventura, Victor Hovland. They won a national championship. You know, Sam Stevens was the sixth man on that national championship team. Austin Eckroat, another PGA Tour winner, was on that team. It is insane to look back. I believe, what was it, 2018 Oklahoma State team, and see that, you know, Sam Stevens was not on the top five at Nationals, should have been, wasn't an elite enough player to do so. It's just that, you know, the coach at Oklahoma State had these five other great players and PGA Tour, now PGA Tour winners in Matthew Wolf and Victor Hovland and Austin Eckroat and Chris Ventura. It was a very elite team, but Stevens, you know, I in my college days at Texas Wesleyan, I got to meet Sam and his caddy, Will Dennis, become good friends with him. He has kept that chip on his shoulder from Oklahoma State, plays with a lot of toughness, and really time and time again on the PGA Tour, at the tougher golf course, shows up. And you know, look at the California Swing, you know, around the West Coast, had a top five finish at Torrey Pines last year, where he was right there with Harris English. Stevens, he had a top 25 at the Masters, top 20 at Doral, one of the toughest courses on the PGA Tour schedule. Here was Sam Stevens on why he steps up at the tougher golf course.
I think I do pretty well when the setup is difficult. Generally, you know, a lot of my good finishes on tour have been at tougher setups. So, I don't get so bothered by bogeys when there's not a ton of birdies being made. And it seems like a lot of weeks on tour, you know, it's 20, 25 under. So when I get to a course where I feel like, you know, well, this week, I mean, it might get to 10, I guess, but 10 under or less is going to win. I feel like I have a good chance.
It's just amazing to see after the Cadillac Championship, where he had a good finish on a tough golf course in Trump Doral, he has not finished better than 42nd in his last four events coming into this week. Sam Stevens had not finished 42nd in his last four tournaments coming into the U.S. Open, where he is currently four shots back of the lead. He spoke about this with the press, talked about a big reset last week, skipped the Canadian Open, talked about a reset after this four-week tough spurt. Here was Stevens on that.
I'd say generally I've had a pretty good attitude over the last, I guess this is my fourth year on tour. That's been a strength of mine, but I had mentioned. Yeah, so like over the last 4 weeks, I think starting at Truist, I had a terrible attitude at Truist, and then I think PGA was the following week, and it was just kind of the same kind of stuff, just getting real down and kind of being a curmudgeon when I don't need to be. You know, I'm only 29, so probably don't need to be bitter about things quite yet. But, yeah, I mean, I think just the conversations happened kind of week in and week out over the last month or so, and then I've had some good talks with my wife over the last week. I was at home last week during the Canadian Open and just kind of trying to relax a little bit and trying to, again, just have a little bit better perspective than I have been.
You know, Stevens, if you are out at Shinnecock today, this is a great team to go out and watch. You know, Sam Stevens, to me, has one of the best attitudes on the PGA Tour. And if you went, you know, I obviously watch him week in, week out. I see him when he's finishing 70th. I see him when he's finishing 5th. He is up there with the Xander Schauffeles, the Ludvig Åbergs of the world, players with perfect mental mindsets, composed between the ears. You know, when Sam's playing bad, he's not out there acting like a clown and breaking stuff and being disrespectful with reporters. He is always carrying himself to the best of his ability, respecting the game. Him and Will Dennis, his caddy, have an excellent game plan out there. I love to watch them prepare for the golf shots, do their work, especially if you're at practice rounds the rest of the year. If the tour is coming to you and you're in practice rounds, go watch Sam and Will do their thing and prepare for a golf tournament. Very impressive stuff. You know, Sam and Will, not only, you know, is he a great caddy, but, you know, kind of acts as the mental coach there. Very good at keeping Sam composed. So I'm super fired up for them rolling into the weekend. One thing that slipped past me in my preparations was the Poa Greens at Shinnecock, and it's a surface that Stevens is very comfortable with. Listen in. This will be Stevens on enjoying Poa, AJ.
Yeah, definitely at the speed that they're at, you can be a little more aggressive, although I came up short a lot today. You know, a lot of the putts that are up the hill are pretty slow. You know, if they're up the hill and into the wind, you got to really hit them. But, yeah, I feel like I've putted pretty well on Poana. I've played well at Torrey Pines. I grew up at Wichita Country Club. They had Poana Green, so I feel pretty comfortable with, you know, maybe balls bouncing a little bit. Yeah, you know, I've rolled the ball well. I've had fairly decent touch, which is nice. And, you know, a few of them dropped in, and that's just the way it goes sometimes. So hopefully it continues.
And while Stevens off at 3:34 Eastern alongside Xander Schauffele, two-time major champion Xander Schauffele, I mean, that would be the group I'd be following if I was at Shinnecock today. You know, watch Sam and Will get after it. Watch Xander Schauffele and his caddy Austin and their preparation and the way they pick apart a golf course. Actually, you know, if it's not going to be Wyndham, I do like the winner coming out of the Xander-Sam Stevens third-round pairing. Once again, more unknown player to watch, Sam Stevens, coming in here, coming into the weekend, 31-1 to win. Let's move a little farther down the leaderboard, get to world number one, Scottie Scheffler. You know, trails by seven heading into the weekend, looking to become the seventh player in history to complete the career Grand Slam. And, you know, made a lot of improvement yesterday. You look back to Thursday, he shot two over. You know, had it made a double on the par 4 8th, made an unfortunate bogey on the par 5 16th. And you know, him and Rory, they were in they're both sitting at even par right now. You know, to start the week, when we were talking on Tuesday, I thought Scotty and Rory were going to be in that easier wave on Thursday morning, and that was just not the case. You know, Scheffler, after shooting two over on Thursday, you know, he was just grateful to still be in the tournament, to get through Thursday and then Friday in that early late wave and still be in this tournament, not shoot himself out of the tournament like Adam Scott, Chris Goddard, Siwoo Kim, some of my picks did. Listen in to Scheffler on just feeling lucky to make it to the weekend.
You know, the tournament's halfway done. You know, yesterday was a day in which, you know, you could kind of shoot yourself out of the tournament. The conditions were really, really tough yesterday, and did a good job of hanging in there. You know, I had a tough front nine yesterday, but battled back nicely on the back nine, and then had another solid day today to kind of back that up and, you know, hopefully do more of the same over the next couple of days.
You know, when you look at Scheffler, you know, I just want to take a look at Scheffler's overall stats through two rounds here at the U.S. Open, just get a feel of what exactly, and he's still doing everything positively. Everything across the board, the driver, the approach, the chipping, the putting, it is all in a very sound place. He could absolutely make a move. When you look at the odds, seven back, Scheffler is only at 10-1 odds. He closed the week 6-1, only 10-1, seven back. So Vegas still giving him full respect. After the round yesterday, and once again, very commendable second round from Scotty, 2-under 68 to get himself back in this thing. He feels the breeze is the most challenging part of Shinnecock. Listen in.
I mean, the wind was up yesterday. Wind was up again today. This golf course, with the amount of pitch you have on the greens, playing in the wind is extremely difficult. And judging speed on putts when the wind is blowing that hard can be challenging as well. So I think the wind definitely was the biggest challenge the first couple days. And it looks like we're going to have some more wind tomorrow. And, Wyndham was able to handle it really well, obviously, the first couple days. But, you know, like I said, the tournament's halfway done. And I did a good job of kind of hanging in there the last 2 days and hopefully, you know, start making a bit of a move over the next couple days.
So Scotty goes off at 2:01 Eastern alongside former Open champion Brian Harman, and that is the tee time right before Rory McIlroy and Maverick McNealy. That'll be a fun, you know, if you're out there today, those two groups, Scheffler, Harman, McNealy, McIlroy, those are two fun pairings to watch. Rory. You know, in a little bit of a different situation than Scotty, Rory just has nothing to lose. He's got the Grand Slam under his belt, won the Masters earlier this year. Rory, you know, looking to become the seventh player in history to win the Masters and the U.S. Open in the same year. We have not seen that happen since Jordan Spieth in 2015 when he won the green jacket and then would go on to win the U.S. Open later that year at Chambers Bay and steal one from Dustin Johnson. Here was Rory McIlroy, the reigning Masters champion, after his round yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, got off to a very solid start, as you said. 2 under through 8 holes, had a good chance for birdie on 9. Let that one slip away, and then, yeah, the back 9 was a bit of a battle. Started with, you know, 3 bogeys in a row to start the back. Couldn't stop getting myself to hit it over the back of the green. Those 3 holes, and then played pretty good from there on in. That one mistake on 15, bad chip shot from over the back. But, you know, the wind felt like it was laying down for us the first few holes, and then it certainly got back up again, sort of around, you know, when we made the turn. So, thought we were going to get away with it and get some easier conditions, but the back 9 was very, very tough. So, I think anyone on this side will feel like they got the rough end of the draw, but still feel like I'm in the tournament and in with a decent chance.
Yeah, once again, looking back to Tuesday, we thought Rory and Scotty's wave, early, late, we thought that was going to be the prime wave. We were all proven wrong. Rory, even despite being in the bad wave, Thursday when he shot 1 under, he said he was fortunate to just be in the red numbers. And then yesterday, yes, his front 9 in the afternoon, very calm. He was 2 under through 9. He bogeys 10, 11, and 12. Misjudged the wind, flew a couple greens, gets 2 of them back. Great birdies on 13 and 14. And then as he mentioned in his interview, flew the green again on 15 and then made a mess around the greens playing ping pong. But nonetheless, Rory McIlroy, 7 back, will have to clean up a little bit of the iron play. But him and Scotty still definitely in the mix. On the other side, to close things out, we'll talk about Joaquin Niemann's, his roller coaster of the first 2 days at Shinnecock. I just want to see this. Just so, yeah. 78-65 for Niemann. 78-65. And the 78 in round 1 featured an 11. He made an 11 on the par 4 6th hole at Shinnecock. Joaquin Niemann makes an 11, shoots 78 in the first round, gets a 2-shot penalty. So let me rewind here. Makes a 9. Gets a 2-shot penalty for throwing his club on that hole. So, writes for an 11. Comes out yesterday. Birdies 5 of his first 6 holes. Ends up shooting 65 to get back to 3 over. Made the cut by 1. We'll hear from Niemann on the other side. We'll hear from final qualifier and SMU native Harry Higgs on the other side. And we'll also hear from Phenom Amateur and 15-year-old Miles Russell. He made the cut. We'll hear from Russell a little bit later on. This is the Golf Hour with Will Doctor. We're back after this.
This is the Golf Hour
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor.
Okay, if you're just joining us, we heard from the leader, Wyndham Clark. We heard from the chaser, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Sam Stevens. We heard from the leaders of the game who are at even par, and Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. In case you missed any of this, you can find the Golf Hour on Apple Podcast and Spotify at the conclusion of today's show. Really, the other major storyline outside of the leaders has been the roller coaster ride of Joaquin Niemann through 36 holes. This is a 27-year-old Chilean who makes his home on the LIV Circus now, has gotten some special exemptions here in the last 2 years to play some majors, finished tied 18th at Aronimink. I watched at Aronimink on Monday. I watched one of my favorite practice rounds to watch was Jon Rahm, Joaquin Niemann, and David Puig. None of these three guys did I see miss a shot in either one of their practice rounds on Monday or Tuesday at the PGA. I'm serious here. I've watched a lot of golf. I think I've watched almost every player on the PGA Tour and Korn Ferry Tour hit a golf ball. It is tough to find some sharper ball strikers than Jon Rahm and Joaquin Niemann. And Niemann is showing that this week. He's gaining over five shots on the field with his iron play, with his second shot. And had it not been for, basically, Niemann opened 78-65. Had it not been for an 11 on the sixth hole, made a nine, got docked two shots for tossing a club 60 yards. You take away that 11, and Niemann's at the top of this leaderboard right now. This was one of the strangest situations on Thursday evening. The TVs were off. The streaming was off. Peacock was off. There's no video of this. Thursday night, he's cruising along. He's even through five. He started on the back nine Thursday, was two over through nine on the back nine, and then birdied three and five. So he gets to the par four sixth. And he hits two balls out of bounds right off the sixth tee box. Basically hits his, let's see, okay, so 1 OB, drop 2, 3 OB, drop 4, 5 in the fescue. He tries to hack it out of the fescue, has a horrible lie, ends up throwing a sand wedge about 60 yards, and it ends up finding out after the round, even though there's no video. I mean, I guess there was a volunteer that or the walking score that said something to the rules official. Learns he'd been hit with a two-shot penalty. Here was Niemann. Eight-time LIV Circus winner, two-time PGA Tour winner, but still really looking to get in the mix at a major for the first time in his career. Still 27, still very young, a lot of time to figure out how to go about his business at our four biggest tournaments of the year. But here was Niemann, the Chilean, on the situation on sixth, where on Thursday on the sixth hole, where he completely lost control of his emotions.
Yeah, I mean, I hit it two times out of bounds on the right, two bad swings. And then got pretty frustrated. And I'm not someone that, like to be on that behavior. I'm the first one to judge myself when I don't behave on the golf course. And, yeah, I mean, that was a misbehave from my part. I felt like I got a little bit extra penalized with two-shot penalty, but I think it is what it is. And, I think I'm going to learn from it. And it definitely kind of helped me a little bit to kind of have a better round today.
The leaders of golf, the PGA Tour, the USGA RNA, and you could even throw in the LIV Circus Clown Show in there, they all need to get on the same page regarding penalties. Because what you're seeing is, we've seen over the last 5 years, we saw Rory throw his club into a water at Bay Hill a few years ago. Gave it the big tomahawk in the water. We've seen Scheffler throw clubs, kick his bag, tossing balls in the water at Bay Hill. No one's ever going to say anything to them. But here's Niemann grinding it out at 8:30 in the evening in the first round of the U.S. Open, trying to save his round, trying to save his tournament. There's no video of this. There was no one on the golf course. And he gets docked two shots for throwing the club 60 yards. It's not that I mind the penalty, and I don't think you can throw the club 60 yards on the course in a professional golf tournament, but all of these, the powers that be in golf, PGA Tour, DP World Tour, they all need to get on the same page with their penalties, because we see players lose it all the time, each and every week, and especially players who are missing the cut. John Rahm let out a series of F-bombs yesterday en route to missing the cut. I know he's going home, but still, you know, if we're going to set an expectation here, and of course you have the Golf Channel broadcast going, oh, well, Jack Nicklaus never swore, and Arnold Palmer, yeah, whatever. All right, they had what, 1 2-hour broadcast per round back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s. These people don't know what Arnold and Jack were saying on the golf course. They have no idea and what they were doing off the golf. There was no social media. There was no Twitter. There was only a one-hour broadcast on Sunday. Don't even give me this, oh, Arnold and Jack, they never swore and they never threw a club. Please, I don't want to hear any of that. Even from some of these legends of the broadcast team like McGinley and Shane, I cannot believe McGinley would actually say that Arnold and Trevino and Player and Nicklaus never had any kind of outburst on the golf course. It's just he didn't see it because there was not as much advance to social media or broadcast back in the 50s or 60s. My request after the Neiman thing and after the Clark thing last year is that basically the rest of the powers in golf emulate how the USGA penalizes for bad behavior. A two-shot penalty, I'd like to see it on the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, Live Circus, and have it be enforced at the AJGA, NCAA level as well. Listen, everyone go enjoy watching the U.S. Open. Take a look at how smart these players go about their business today. Take a look at how good their chipping and putting is on the icy surfaces at Shinnecock, the marble floor green surfaces at Shinnecock. We're gonna get a great competition this weekend. Especially look at the top five of the leaderboard right now. You look at the experience Clark has and Xander has and Fitzpatrick has. This is gonna be a showdown. Everyone enjoy the U.S. Open. This is the Golf Hour with the Bull Doctor. We'll talk next week.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.